Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, it's on. Be quiet, please.
Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. We're continuing our series tonight on abolishing probate. With me, of course, is Luann Fleming and Robin Austin of the Hidden Truth Revealed Radio and FACES.org. And our guest this evening is Carly Walden with Hospice Patient Alliance. And so we're going to be covering hospice tonight. For those of you who were watching, and I never watch cable news, but I was told to go watch, Tucker Carlson did a piece over the weekend, over the holiday, about Bulgaria, of all places, euthanizing the elderly. And surprise, surprise, everybody, they're doing this everywhere. They're getting rid of us. The first part of this I heard, the first step of this was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, Tony Hutton, who was from Australia. He used to be around a lot, and his mother had been caught in one of these guardianships over there, found where Germany, and I ran this down, I actually was talking to some German couples over there, that Merkel had decided that it was too costly for the state of Germany to have to take care of the elderly, so they were shipping them out to Southeast Asia, most particularly to Vietnam, to be cared for there because it was saving them a lot of money. Unfortunately, the family wasn't notified before this happened. Nobody knew where these people were. They could have no contact with them. And personally, and I'm just assuming here, they never made a trip anywhere at all except to the nearest crematorium. I think this is exactly what was going on. When you start shipping your people out of the country because it's too costly to take care of them, you aren't going to pay for them to be cared for somewhere else. I think, and people have never heard from their relatives again. You can't know how they are. You can't talk to anyone. You can't know their status. We're running into the same thing here. This guardianship issue in this country has absolutely exploded. Millions are being stolen from the elderly by these professional predators. This has all been set up by the Bar Association. It's all been put into statutes which are unconstitutional. And for those of you who think if you run to an attorney and set up your estate to avoid guardianship and conservatorship and that will protect you, you are sadly mistaken, because there isn't a probate judge in this country who cannot discard all of your instruments at will and hand you body and soul over to that guardian. This is identity theft taken to the max. This is the definition of identity theft. That stranger to your family now presents them as your themselves as your family member. This is fraud. They now get a testamentary of power saying they can sell your property. This is called conversion, illegal conversion. They have access to all your assets. They can access all of your accounts, your trusts, any liquid accounts. The case of Lisa Belanger out there in Boston, her father had a safety deposit box. We have pictures of the guardian standing there watching while the lock was drilled out on it so they could get the contents out. You are safe nowhere. And now they are committing eugenics, which is the intentional killing of people for whom they can get no more money out of, either through Medicare or Medicaid, or an insurance company won't pay anymore. They can't milk any more money out of them. We are talking eugenics. You have no more value to us. You don't have anything we can take that's of any value. There's no sense in you going on living. So, adios. And this is what we're going to be talking about, how they are accomplishing this now. Every bit of this, of course, based on the original eugenic society that existed in the late 1800s, became the White Rose Society, trying to clean up their act, then became the blueprint for what Hitler did all across Europe. He went after, and I know this is supposed to have been the Jewish Holocaust. It was not. They were part of it, yes, but there were 23 million people killed, 2 million of which were Jewish. The rest of them were old, infirm. They were people who were educators, entertainers. They were people who had a life that they thought was worth living, and yet the Nazis believed they did not. They were the wrong religion, the wrong color. They were this, they were that, they were something else. God help you if you were in a mental institution. They were used for medical experimentation. And tell me that isn't exactly what they're doing in these hospitals now when they medically kidnap someone because you want a second opinion. They're running an experiment. If you get a second opinion, they might get exposed. We're seeing this happen more and more often across the country. But of concern to us, and especially in relationship to the Anastasia Adams case, what was done to this woman is what lies ahead for all of us if we do not stop these monsters that are walking among us. And they truly are monsters. And one of the things that was done during the Bush-Cheney reign of terror, they let in the Electronic Medical Records Act. That was to become fully operational by October 2014. Then they came in with the Mandatory Vaccination Act. They didn't get away with that one, but it was to become fully functional by October 2014. Mm-hmm. Then came Obamacare, and every part and parcel of it was to become fully functional by October 2014. You think that was an accident, an incident, just an incredible happening? This has been a plan long in the making. When you hit 50 years old in this country, you cease to have any value. And, well, let me put it this way, you suddenly decrease in value. And if you're a woman, you understand this. You're supposedly aged out of the program by then. Fortunately for women like me, that'll never happen. But anyway, you're supposed to be aged out of the program. You lose your value in society. And as you move onward in age and you pass the age of 60, your value decreases more. Your risk score with the insurance companies and in the medical industry begins to rise. By the time you hit 65, you've become disposable. Now, you can become disposable before that through injury, through illness, accidents, you know, any kind of thing can bring you to that point. Or you could have been compromised at birth, you know, with, you know, mistakes that were made at birth. Or you can be autistic. You can suffer any number of genetic disorders that render you, by the time you are 50 years old, to be worthless and useless if you live that long. We are what Henry Kissinger referred to as useless eaters. And now they have come up with a very clever plan on how to get rid of us useless eaters and make it look like they're doing a good deed. Hospice, for many, many years, was the Good Samaritan outfit who came and sat with the patient, a terminally ill patient, who came and gave the family a break so they could get away a little bit, that was a companion that stayed with the family, helped that person ease out so that they weren't alone and they didn't suffer alone. They were there with them under Obamacare. They got an $11.5 billion infusion of cash to go from Good Samaritan to hastening the end of life. Their That's job right. now is to get you out of here as quickly as possible. And from everything I've read, from the start to finish, 10 days. 10 days to end your life. And one of the things our guest is, one of the things our guest is going to be talking about is someone called the closer. And with that, I want to welcome everybody to the show. Robin, Luann, and Carly, thank you for coming on and being our guest this evening.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you so much for having me, Marty.
Yeah. How did you get involved with hospice, Carly?
Okay, well, I got involved with hospice because of my grandmother, Jack McGivney. And what happened to her is she had misdiagnoses that were put on her, end-stage cardiomyopathy and renal failure, as well as pneumonia. That was what was written on the hospice prescription. Our family, naive at the time, of course, like most people are back then, we didn't know what hospice was. We were thinking it was, they told us actually, they sent out a salesperson that said, this is the, you get a few good days rest, you're going to come back home, you would be amazed what a couple of nights rest would do. And so we were okay with that. Well, my grandmother was dropped off on a Friday night at 10 o'clock at a hospice, okay, an inpatient hospice unit. So we came in the next morning, and my grandmother, who is totally alert, totally with it, sharp, she could barely hold her spoon, and they had put a catheter in her. She can use the bathroom by herself. So they had put a catheter in her. I started noticing that her pee color, which is a normal yellow color all the time because I'm her caretaker, and my father, who's a former police captain, we noticed that it started turning from yellow to a dark, dark tea color. So I'm noticing these things are going on. Something's not right. I'm thinking, what the hell are they doing to my grandmother? And, you know, I have a medical background, so I started taking notes and asking many questions. And anyway, I came home and started doing research. I asked them, what are you giving my grandmother? And I was told morphine. Morphine, Ativan, and Seroquel. And they told us just go home and let us do our job. And we're like, what? We're not going anywhere. So what happened is I came back with my dad, and I said, Dad, I came home, I did research, I saw that was a lethal drug cocktail that hospices use. And I said, Dad, they're killing your mom, my grandmother. And we went immediately back to that hospice, and I went to their family room. I dialed 911. I told them I wanted officers and I wanted an ambulance immediately. She was so dehydrated, Marty. Her tongue, I've never seen her tongue look this way. Now, everyone in that hospice looked the same way. They all had the same look. No one was moving. Everyone looked like they were in a coma, and they were in a coma.
Yes.
So we got her immediately. I said, I want liquid in her immediately. My dad could not get her to come to at all. He kept slapping her on the face, on the arms. Everything we did, she was not responding. So anyway, to make a long story short, the police came in, had no problem with taking her out and revoking hospice at that moment, and they put IVs in her. They didn't think she was going to make it to the hospital. They told us to say our goodbyes right then because they didn't know she was going to make it. I'm telling you what, I was in my vehicle going 120 miles following this ambulance, and I told them we will not go back to that hospital that sent her here. You take her anywhere but that hospital. And luckily, thank to God, it didn't kill her. She was in a morphine coma for a week. We didn't come home. We stayed in hotels. And they were able, she was in a morphine coma. Now, we had, these were honest doctors. They were so honest with us, which is, I'm surprised. But they said, they came into the, to our room, told the family, hey, they missed, they overdosed your grandmother. They told us intentionally overdosed her because there's no way you could give someone that much morphine and it not be intentional. And they said she also was misdiagnosed. Your grandmother does not have end-stage cardiomyopathy, does not have end-stage renal failure, and no longer has pneumonia. What about that? All she has is a urinary tract infection. Mm-hmm. All she had was a urinary tract infection. Unbelievable. So that was the beginning. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Go ahead, honey.
No, I'm just saying that was the beginning of my eyes being wide open. From that point on,
this,
I decided not.
This is what's happening everywhere, is this, and Yolanda has this all out on a spreadsheet of what they do is, when you come into the hospital, and we've talked about this before, and I know it's redundant, but I'll keep saying it till it catches on. Everything you tell that doctor, every symptom you give them is put into a program, which is produced by Medicare and the American Medical Association. And what this does is it kicks out every possible diagnosis that could be applied. And what they are doing in the hospital where you're talking about where she was is trying to increase their profit margin. They may or may not be using hospitalists. Most hospitals are going to them now because it immediately dismisses your primary physician, the one who actually knows you and could contest this. They are immediately out of the picture. And then they start down through this list, applying every treatment and pharmacological treatment, every type of therapy, surgery, whatever, to that patient. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then as if they start improving, then they go to diagnosis two. And then they go to diagnosis three. And each one of those diagnoses has a certain number of days Medicare will pay for. Okay? Mm-hmm. If they can't get you out of there early, then you get diagnosis number two, which justifies you staying longer. Okay. But on the other side of that, they are always, Carly, in every instance I have found, they are always working with at least two nursing homes who also are working on this plan. So they bounce them, they discharge them from the hospital. Go ahead.
This goes to kickbacks. We have, I mean, not only are we talking, you know, nurses, nursing homes, hospices, hospitals, a lot of time you're going to notice and be aware that the medical director of a hospital is the medical director of the hospice. And it's all, like I said, all about the money. They can throw misdiagnoses on people, and that's more profit for them. And I did want to say something I was going to go back to that you were talking about, but that's skipped my mind, so that'll come back to me. But
another part of this was they passed here last year, I think it was, they call it the 21st Century Cures Act. I call it 21st Century Scam Act. And what this did, among many things, among them being selling all of our gas and oil reserves for some bizarre reason, that's going to cure us of everything. But what this did was now doctors no longer have to report the gratuities they get from pharmaceutical companies for pushing their medications. Before they had to report this. Now they don't have to. And HIPAA was supposedly strengthened under this. And it's down to the point that you cannot get your medical file. Your insurance company can. The attorney for the hospital can. Other doctors can. The federal government can. But you can't get your medical file. The reason for that is, of course, to cover up medical abuse and neglect and malpractice. And they said it was wonderful because it dropped malpractice suits from 2% of all the cases overall, that had to have been terrible, down to less than 1%. This is what this mm-hmm. was all about, and this was supposed mm-hmm. to have been about healthcare, but this also facilitates this system we're talking about now, because now with that 21st Century Cures Act, now they can cover mm-hmm. all this stuff up. And mm-hmm. you can never find out what they actually did to your loved one to cause that hastening of death.
Now, this is where I want to talk about the closer, because you are
yes.
very right. Hospice can use closers to end lives, okay? So when a patient lives too long, you know, with the respect to the six-month rule, the hospice may be losing money due to the annual cap on reimbursement they get for each patient. So sometimes a hospice, and many times, they will send in a closer that will take care of that problem. Now, what he does is they will make sure that the patient goes peacefully in their sleep really,
mm-hmm.
really soon. Now, we know that it's not peacefully. We know it's a terminal sedation is what what they're doing. And, you know, that's one way, too, that we talk with money, that it's, you know, affecting money or anything, their money, that they will go in and have the person murdered and will
yes.
hasten their death. So, anyway, you know, it's minimizing the liability.
Right.
And I wanted to, you know, okay, and I wanted to do this about falsifying the medical record. Here's the deal is, you know, you have a closer. Well, guess what? He's writing down the medical records. He's doing the medical records. So he's falsifying the medical records is what he's doing.
Right.
And it's what he's actually done is a cover up, unless someone else can prove it. Remember, in healthcare, your license to practice requires you to chart truthfully and completely. And if
mm-hmm.
you charted something, then that is assumed to be the truth. Just as someone in court under oath is assuming that they, you know, to be telling the truth, if the closer
right.
lies when he charts, the lie is assumed to be the truth. Now,
mm-hmm.
That's why we a lot of times that we always recommend try as fast as you can get those medical records, because you know, try to find any discrepancies at all within in the medical records. Does that make sense?
It does, and I'm going to tell you something. Back in It was 2004, actually around May and June in 2004. Every hospital in the country converted from, you know how they used to have the file hanging on the end of your bed? Or they
mm-hmm.
would have it in a slot outside the door, and everybody, medically, nurses, doctors, whomever came in, grabbed that and came in and made notes while they talked to you or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
This was the logging that you're talking about that was to be done continually,
mm-hmm.
and this was the
mm-hmm.
medical record, but under Bush-Cheney, by executive order,
mm-hmm.
everyone had
mm-hmm.
to convert to electronic, and
mm-hmm. the
so
medical administration record.
Yes, and now you can't see that record. You
mm-hmm.
cannot look at it. You can't see what was done. You can't see who came in to see them, when they came in, how long they were there, what they did while they were there. You can't see anything. And this was done intentionally, there again, to deprive you of evidence you would need of the crimes committed.
Mm-hmm.
I need to say something here. The chat room has stalled out again. I'm sorry about that. The phone board is full. I'm getting messages from people that all the circuits are busy. The show will be available in archive continually if we don't get thrown off the air again. But if we do, we'll just come back and do another show. So there you go. But we are full, so just ease up. Try to listen over the net if you can. Listen by your phone if you can. You can dial in and just listen to the show. And at later on, I've got a lot of questions about this too. People want to know if they can ask questions. The last half hour, we'll take questions and comments. Right now, we need Carly speaking about what's going on and how this mm-hmm. system was put into place. Now, Carly, mm-hmm. you got your grandma out of there, and you got her home
yes.
in here. What was it? 2 weeks ago, we actually got to speak with her
yes.
on the show.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you
and,
did.
And she just, yeah, how's she doing today?
She's doing wonderful. She's doing wonderful,
good.
Marty. She, another thing I wanted to add is that I found Ron Panzer, who is the president of Hospice Patients Alliance, and
mm-hmm.
He recommended, you know, to get pro-life doctors, which Human Alliance is another pro-life group that he co-founded, has a
mm-hmm.
database. And we found pro-life doctors, amazing doctor, and look, that has admitting rights. This goes back to what you were talking about with the hospitalists who don't know you from Adam, because every time you go in, you're going to see a different hospitalist.
Yes.
Now, if you get a doctor that has admitting rights, that doctor is going to be the only doctor that will be able to admit you into the hospital. I don't care if it's 2 o'clock in the morning. The hospital is going to call that doctor, tell them what's going on, and they are the only ones that have the authority, period, to admit you. And that is what I would highly recommend that people
yeah.
do. Highly.
I started, Carly, 3 years ago, warning people about hospitals that were using hospitalists. And
mm-hmm.
like I say, your primary care physician is immediately written off. And you are at the mercy of these people. And in every hospital where they are doing medical kidnap, they are using hospitalists. And they will not
yes.
let the primary care physician have any say in any. They don't recognize anything they've done or said, any treatments they've done or anything else. And it is
That's
hospitalists
right.
that are doing this. And these are people that, if you ask me, in my opinion, and I know you didn't,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to give it to you anyway, these people need to be brought up on charges. They are not there for your health. They are there
That's
to increase
right.
the profit of the hospital. That's why they were hired. In any hospital that is using hospitalists,
mm-hmm.
and ask them if they are using hospitalists. If they
That's
and
right.
if they'll try to couch it all kind of different ways. Well, we have on staff. We've got doctors on staff. All they always did.
Mm-hmm.
They always had a resident. They always had somebody. You know, you might not be able to get them out of a sleep, but they had somebody there. But if they are using hospitalists, turn and run, because your
yes.
life is in danger. Get
it
the hell
really
out
is
of
in
there
danger.
And move on. This has become the health industry, if you can even call it that, has become nothing to me except one huge experiment on the public. And we have been cornered through Obamacare, through things that Bush Cheney did, through things that are happening in Health and Human Services. We have been cornered into where we have no rights. And
mm-hmm.
the idea that we can give people to another person basically as chattel property under guardianship, or we can allow them to be robbed blind under conservatorship and have to produce no evidence,
mm-hmm.
and a judge won't even allow you to produce evidence in order for this
mm-hmm.
to take place, is a disgrace. The first thing that needs to happen is we end guardianship as it exists today. If you're going to steal someone's identity from them and declare them dead in the law, and I have told people this, compare papers you get from an administrative court to papers you get from a court of law. In an administrative court, their name and your name will be in all capital letters, which until 1963 in the Bar Association's Language and Terms Manual said was signifying a dead man's estate. You just got declared dead, but you're still breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
but if it came from a court of law, your name will be spelled appropriately with a capital letter followed by small letters. And the name of the court will be capital letter followed by small letters. Anything that is administrative, meaning unconstitutional, is all in caps. And but this whole is the way we facilitated this system. This became so lucrative that when they ran the deal on Obamacare, now we're available for experiment. And go ahead, you know, something else too. 2003, mm-hmm. Donald Rumsfeld in the Department of Defense, which is a private corporation, by the way, the Department of Defense, he rewrote the manual on such things as vaccines and experiments, because they do a lot of this stuff. And he said in there that not only could they do whatever they wanted to the military, they could do it to the general population and even pregnant women and minorities. That they could experiment in any, because it's for the greater good. You know, if you're going to save people, so what if a few people have to die? So we have a Department of Defense that's a part of this. Do you understand? We've all been targeted. We've all been, we're all exposable, expendable, disposable. And, Carly, when your grandma was being held prisoner in this place, are you aware of any vaccinations?
No, they did not do any vaccinations on her while she was in there. You know, you will notice this. They're very, these are not nice people. They're not when you go in. So, you know, there were no vaccinations, but there is no nice people in there. One thing I wanted to talk a little bit about, we were talking about the kickbacks, and this is so important because the general public is not aware of this, and these are illegal activities, okay? And I want you to know, I spoke up, and I said, I went to a nursing home because my grandmother had done rehab before this happened. And I went to that administrator, and I said, are you receiving kickbacks? Of course, he's going to tell me no because he knows that it's illegal. But I know that they are. But kickback arrangements can be made between hospices and physicians, hospice, nursing homes, hospices and hospitals, hospices and funeral homes. So you can just let your imagination run wild. And, you know, you'll be sure to figure out what benefit it would be to a nursing home or a physician to get kickbacks for referring exclusively to one particular hospice. Do you see where I'm going?
Yeah, because we ran into the same thing in guardianship. When we first started breaking this open, what we found in hospitals, and this was just before they started using the hospitalist, was that a lot of times it was the charge nurse who had a guardian on speed dial and attorneys on speed dial. We got a live one, and the person woke up in the morning and they're under a guardianship that was granted overnight by fax by a judge who was participating, and they were put on that. The other thing people need to watch out for when they go in, if you're in the hospital, is now what they do is send in a case manager. And whether speak to that, whether you speak to that person or not, they write up a report as if you did. And suddenly now the caseworker comes in, and the next thing comes a psychiatrist, a social worker comes in. This one, have you been abused? Have you been hurt? And you say no. Well, they wrote it up. They're denying, but there's evidence of abuse. What evidence was that? Well, I don't have to produce it. I don't have to, but I just have to say it. And this
you are so
kicks
right
this,
about that.
Yep.
Right.
This kicks this whole program into the... Luann, I hear you saying there, talking there in the background. Go ahead, girl.
Just kind of just taking all this in, and it just really kind of pisses me off because you go into a hospital, and you're not thinking of any of that. I mean, you're going to a hospital to get the healthcare professionals to guide you through your gallbladder surgery or whatever you have, and you have no idea that, you know, you get into a car accident, boom, you could become a ward of the state. And then you have hospice issues that could just legally kill you like that. And like Charlie's mom, I mean, that just is very shocking. that all this to happen. I mean,
yes.
I'm just sitting here just
well,
saying,
it's terrifying.
It
and hospitals. Yes, and the other thing
happening
is
every day.
It is, mm-hmm. and the fraud in Medicare alone is 30 to 60 billion a year by the medical industry. Now, how do you suppose they're making that money? They're padding bills,
mm-hmm.
lying on their reports, what treatments they gave, what medications they gave, and they're padding their bills. They're charging for services never rendered. Now, if you
mm-hmm.
know that 30 to 60 billion is being defrauded from Medicare, and you know who's doing it, and for all you millennials out there that think it's us old people that are getting a check for going into the hospital, you are sadly mistaken, because we don't see that money. That goes straight to that doctor. It goes to that hospital. It goes to that pharmacy. It goes to that nursing home. We don't see that money, and we more than likely
mm-hmm.
didn't get any of those services either. So if you want to complain
mm-hmm.
about Medicare, why don't you go to the source? This is not an entitlement program. This is insurance fraud. Medicare
mm-hmm.
is an insurance, and it is being defrauded by the medical industry.
Mm-hmm.
I am.
That's right.
Hospitalizations by people over 60 are down by now more than 63% because people are terrified to go into the hospital for fear they will never come home. And many
mm-hmm.
times they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you know, the inpatient is dropping that precipitously, the problem is not with the patient, it's with the provider.
Yes. And, you know, I just to add to that, I had done an interview on the Vicki Travis show because I will host for her. You know, whenever we do that. So I was speaking with, like I have mentioned this before, but I was speaking with a woman who had worked in the hospital for 35 years. The last 5 years of her career, she was in a position of power and saw how everything was done from the top down, okay, financially. And the caseworker is so important, what you mentioned, Marty, because when that patient starts to negatively affect the hospital's budget, they
yes.
will send in a caseworker. That you'll see them, and the hospitalist too. They'll send in the hospitalist, just like they did with my grandmother. That's what they did to us, caseworker, the hospitalist that misdiagnosed her, and like you said, a psychiatrist, social worker. And you know what's happened? They recommend hospice 99% of the time.
Uh-huh.
And they know that that person's going to be gone and they're going to be dead. And,
right.
and the hospital also does not want a death on their record because it affects their Medicare star rating. So
yes.
they will go out of their way to, I mean, I spoke with a woman that they were fighting her tooth and nail. They wanted to get her mother out of the hospital and down to a hospice, and she fought them. And I'm telling you what, those healthcare workers, they turned like snakes on her because
uh-huh.
she fought them. And
yep.
she did, and so she was able to save her, you know, her mother from being killed, you know, by the hospice. So I just wanted to, you know, add some of that in there.
Yeah.
You know, it's important. You know, hospice can ignore your power of attorney and create a new one.
Yep.
Were you aware of that?
Yes.
This is
what I've been telling people, Carly. That hospice charge nurse can
mm-hmm.
now, under Obamacare and the 21st Century Cures Act, can override
mm-hmm.
the patient, the family, and the physician.
And
yep. call for a DNR or call for what they call futility of care, which starts the dehydration and nutrition withdrawal. And four
yep.
days into this, if this goes on 4 days or more, usually the damage is irreversible at that point, because usually by that time when they start that, they have already broken down this patient to such a point that
That's
they can't
right.
survive. So
That's
you
right.
are watching
You're right,
the slow death. And that's exactly what they do. Exactly what they do.
And it's
and
very
they have
painful,
to give it the power.
Actually.
Yes. And that's what, when
that,
the, if the, mm-hmm. the flags, when they start talking about palliative care, grab
mm-hmm.
your mommy, your daddy, whoever it is, and run like hell. Because what
yeah,
they're telling you is
euthanasia
yeah.
has taken over palliative care. Okay, the euthanasia
uh-huh.
society has taken over palliative care, and people don't realize that now. But hopefully they'll start to realize that both palliative care and hospice have been taken over by the euthanasia society. So,
yep.
and a lot of them have bragged, you know what, we've had nurses, hospice nurses that we spoke to that said, I'm just like Jack Kevorkian, but I do it with morphine and get away with it.
Yes.
So, you know, I've made notes of things, people that these sick psychopaths that kill are
yes.
killing them, and they actually brag about it.
Uh-huh.
They brag.
I want to know, Carly, how do you go to work every day and know that your job is to slowly kill another human being? How do you go? And I've heard mm-hmm. the excuse, I got a family to support. So did I.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I got
uh-huh.
bills to pay. So do I.
That's right.
You know,
right.
But I'm not going to hurt
mm-hmm.
you to do it.
That's right.
You know,
that's what we say. I would rather... No matter what you have to do, period, if you have to go and flip hamburgers, that's what I've said before on our show, is that you're killing somebody. You don't want to do that. You don't. And a lot of, okay, here's another problem. A lot of these hospice nurses that I've spoken to that want to do something that I get emails from and everything else, they're scared to death to speak up. And say, okay, we're killing this person. I've seen these deaths happen because they're afraid of being blacklisted in the whole industry for being a whistleblower. And
yes.
and Ron has cleared that up. You know what? You can still have work and do work like Ron does. And he was a whistle. He was a hospice nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a whistleblower and saw all of these killings, and he just could not live with it. So he decided to make a decision. But he didn't, you know, he was able to still find work. And so they're afraid. And I really want the listeners, and if you're a hospice worker and anyone, please don't be afraid to speak up. Be human and do the right thing
mm-hmm.
When you see this happening.
When,
yes.
you know, here about a year and a half ago, I was on a show on GCN, and one of the things I talked about, well, it was based around guardianship and about the quota system and how many people are drug mm-hmm. into it and how every quarter they mm-hmm. have to estimate how many people they're going to drag into it. And it has to increase by at least 7% quarterly. And same with mm-hmm. CPS. It's all based and it's all tied to federal funding. The reason we can't get this stopped anywhere and the reason we have to stop it in our states is that even our state legislators are sucking at the tit of the federal government so hard for millions of dollars every year that they would rather you died than to give up that funding. It comes mm-hmm. in from so many places in so many ways, and it's all to implement the federal business plan, which is to get rid of as many of us as possible, starting with the elderly and the disabled. We see they're already buying and selling our kids, forcibly adopting mm-hmm. us, telling people now that their children don't belong to them, they belong to the state. And this is what this part of, I think, of what's going on here is they have. And I had this conversation this afternoon with someone about grand juries, our right to a grand jury, and the mm-hmm. fact that they have tried to negate the grand jury and say, oh, no, you can't have one. And I've seen a lot mm-hmm. going on and regarding the grand jury process. But when our police actively involve themselves in the kidnapping of people from their homes and forced mm-hmm. into these guardianships, I got a problem with that. And when I see these attorneys, when they try to change the law in states, running in screaming bloody murder, and like down in New Mexico, where they tried to change the statute, they said the backlash from the Bar Association was so severe they backed off of it. When any organization wields that much power, they need to be busted up. And I think they should be made illegal across the country. They've monopolized our court system. They have made a mockery of the justice system. And nobody should lose their right to life. Your right
That's
to life
right.
because of some statute or some damn law they passed that is unconstitutional, but they ram it down your throat anyway. Like I've told you before, anything that ends with the word act is something the government is going to do by force, which is unconstitutional. And so you had the Affordable Care Act, you know, and then you had the 21st Century Cures Act. And so the minute you see that word, there's another red flag. There's a lot of crap in there that's going to hurt you. It's going to benefit and profit them. And have you ever noticed, Carly, they exempt themselves from all of this crap? State and federal. They exempt themselves. They're not subject to their to what they didn't. You can't make that. No. No, you can't do that.
No, they're not. No,
they're not
going
to
do
it. Yeah.
No.
And so if it's good enough for me, why isn't it good enough for you? If it's such a good deal, I think you'd be the first to jump on it. And but of course they always exempt themselves. Luann, Robin, you're sitting there quiet. You need to say something.
Well, let me just say I've been sitting here thinking about the, you know, the strangest things to me for the longest time was the fact. I mean, I've been studying the hidden truth for a long time. I've been researching and trying to understand what's going on in the world and seeing these patterns of things. And I noticed that there's no media coverage on any of this stuff. And I have realized, you know, I was watching earlier today some of the Bourne Supremacy, Jason Bourne, all of that. And when those books started to be written, the author was visited by some very high-placed people in the government that came to see him because they said, how do you know so much? He said, well, this is fiction. They said, yeah, but it's hitting very close to what's actually true. And said, well, I'm just writing fiction, but but it makes sense that that would be how it worked. They said, well, okay, we'll let you, we're not going to kill you now, but you know, you need to know this is stuff, this is sensitive stuff. And, but in the end of this movie, the lady takes all this secret, top secret information and downloads it and, you know, sends it off to a paper where it can be exposed. Well, I think what has happened over the last 20 years or so, and started happening long before that, is that there is now so much control over the media by the power elite that this is a real thing, or, you know, that we really do have all the local newspapers that have been bought up by big newspapers, all the local radio stations bought up by big radio stations, all the local television stations bought up by big media conglomerates, so that now the news is controlled. This is one of the reasons why this is not common knowledge. When you're stealing multiples, trillions of dollars from people every year, and you have thousands, hundreds of thousands of victims, maybe millions of victims, it would seem that that would be something that would become common knowledge. The only reason that it hasn't is because we have so much control of the media that the people who are releasing it are people like us. And I want people to understand that if I ever turn up dead, I'm not suicidal. I know what that's like. When I was a teenager, I sort of overcame those things, which gave me severe depression that I suffered from for some time. And I am I love life, and I am here to stay and help some things. If I turn up missing or dead, believe me, it was foul play. And the reason for that say would be the things that come out of my mouth, which are truths that are forbidden. And this
exactly.
is the kind of thing that naturopathic doctors are being killed for, because they're telling
mm-hmm.
the truth about if
exactly.
you get your body into harmony with the natural environment that we grew, that our species developed in, and you are eating the foods that nature designed, not the ones that science designed, if you are taking the herbal medicines that are a part of our body's genetic structure, if you are eating the foods that your body is designed to thrive on, if you are getting the exercise you're meant to get, you're going to be healthy, and your body is meant to heal itself, and you don't
yes.
need doctors. Doctors are yeah. an adjunct for emergencies, and there, you know, there was a well-established system in place of natural healers, medicine men, shaman, people who understood energy healing, people who understood herbal healing, and that has been supplanted by this big conglomerate for-profit death industry, which views all of us as property that is to be exploited for the benefit of the people at the top of those pyramids of control. And those pyramids
exactly.
of control are in media. Those pyramids of control are in secret societies that have a membership that may know nothing about the inner meaning of what they do. And they may actually be engaged in community service, helping things. But at the higher levels, they know, what they do know is that you get special privileges, that you're granted
yeah.
special treatment in court, you're granted special treatment in politics, you're granted special
mm-hmm.
treatment in the media. If you go along with the game and you play that game, then you can get
mm-hmm.
ahead and you can become wealthy and you can advance yourself at the cost of, well, there's going to be a lot of people that die. There's going to be a lot of people that are robbed. There's going to be, you know, all of these people that are victims. You have to overlook that. You can't report those stories. You can't tell that truth, because that'll get you killed. And if you just stay away from that stuff and you report the stuff that we give you, why, you can go on and on. And this is, you know, this is something that I want our listeners to understand, that when our radio shows don't come up, when they're somehow booted off, that that may or may not be some accident of fate. That may or may not be some overload on our circuits. That may
mm-hmm.
or may not be coincidental. But but I, for one, think that we all need to be very aware and keep our eyes very open and our minds very open, and understand that we are being massaged and pushed and guided in all of our thinking. This is why it's so hard for people to believe that we're telling the truth when we tell the truth,
mm-hmm.
when we say, hey, they're killing your elders, they're killing these people, and it is merciless
mm-hmm.
and it is murder. They are robbing
mm-hmm.
people, it's merciless, and it is the same as the mob. It's brutal, it's nasty. And people go, that can't be. We're talking about our judges. We're talking about our government here. That they're
yeah.
helping. They're here to guide us through this the world upheaval. You know, what do you mean? You can't be telling the truth, because that would mean everything
mm-hmm.
I know is wrong. Well, everything
mm-hmm.
you know is wrong.
It is.
You
it
are
is.
So right. Mm,
and
very
you know,
powerful.
This goes back, I think, also even a little further. My granddaughters, when they were in high school, and I'm paying close attention to what they're being taught, and the kids congregated here at my house, and I'm listening to their conversations. They always migrated in here where I was, and you know, we want to mm-hmm. think these kids are, you know, clueless, but these kids knew instinctively that what they were being told wasn't right, that there was something
yeah.
wrong with it, and they wanted to know
mm-hmm.
what's really going on. Well, we were told this and this and this, but what's really happening? And so they have a natural curiosity and a natural instinct to know, but they are rewriting history as we speak, and they
oh,
are
mm-hmm.
rewriting it in a way that makes it far different than what it actually is. Ron Paul recently stood up and said, we are the terrorists that the world fears.
Mm-hmm.
We are the terror, and we are. And
mm-hmm.
eventually this is going to come home to us. But we have here
mm-hmm.
in this country the most profitable,
mm-hmm.
successful country on the globe ever. We have a what's called deep state government that sees the majority of us as a nuisance, and they want rid of us. So who do they get rid of? They get rid of the elderly. They get rid of the disabled. They snatch your kids and they sell them off. We have been commodified. And until people realize that, and I think this deal with hospice actually seals the deal. If you cannot look at hospice and see that this is the intentional murder, the intentional ending of a life,
and
simply because
and fraudulent misdiagnoses, I have to add that.
Yes, and
yeah,
this is intentional, and it's intentional to make it sound good to you, the public. Oh, well, they had this or they had that. And it was the kindest thing we could do. And hospice is there. And this radio show I was talking about, I was beginning to figure out hospice wasn't such a good deal anymore. Had a man call in and he's screaming, "That's satanic. That's satanic. These people are of Jesus. They are of Jesus." No, there was only one Jesus. Let's get over that. And but listening to this shrieking, and I hear this from people, "Oh, yeah, I don't know how you could say such a thing." And then 2, 3, 6 months later, they're coming back going, "They put my mother in hospice, and she just lays there staring at the ceiling, and she doesn't move, and she doesn't talk, and yeah, they're drugging her."
That's right.
Well,
and see,
we don't
try
even
to
know
get to
why.
People before that happens. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We try to get to people before this happens is what we know. Our organization, we work so hard to do that.
Yeah.
And like you said, people don't want to listen. They don't think it applies to them until they go through it. And then their whole world is changed.
It's something.
Exactly.
The thing is that a lot of families or under the brainwashing spell that this does not happen to begin with. So when they go into a hospital, when they go into, you know, a nursing care, they're not thinking, "Oh, they're going to kill me." They have no clue what they're headed in there for. I mean, they have no idea.
Right.
And that's why it's up for us advocates to let people know that this is actually going on. So that's why it's saying that we're warning the public what is really truly going on, because I myself have learned a lot in the last couple months myself. I had no idea. In fact, today the hospice called me where my mother is, and they said they were actually releasing my mom today, and the first thing I said was, "Yippee." You know?
That's right. I bet you did, yes.
And I'm happy. Yes, I'll be down to sign the paper tomorrow, you know.
Yep.
But
yep.
Thank
good
God.
I didn't never realize that this could potentially
thank
happen.
God, Luann.
Yes. Yes, they're releasing her, because I called up and asked them, "Since you really don't need to be with my mom anymore, is there a reason why you're still there?" And ever since then, they actually withdrew the case, so that's good.
Excellent.
That's very
excellent.
Good.
Good for
and,
you,
and
Luann.
What Robin was saying about the media censors everything. Ron did so many interviews with the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune. He did a plethora of interviews, and they would intentionally, Marty, they would leave out exactly his main point of what he was trying to get to the public, across the public. And this happened time after time. And let's see, we had an investigative journalist that was going to do our story and some other stories down in Florida. And you know what? All of a sudden, he's retiring. And, all of a sudden, it was going to be the greatest, you know, expose and of his career. And then he retires, see?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's terrible.
This happens all the time. You can't, with Anastasia Adams, I called the Washington Post and said, "You have this story of medical murder happening right there in your backyard, and it's fully documented, video, pictures, documents, whatever you need. Why are you not reporting it?" "Well, we'll look into it." The next day, they come out with an article for Inova Fairfax about how they found some granules on a some surgical trays, and because they are so concerned about their patients and their safety, they weren't bacterial granules, but they didn't know what they were, so they canceled 150 elective surgeries. So what about the surgeries that weren't elective? Did you cancel mm-hmm. those? And see, and it was a big counter PR thing against all of this stuff about Inova Fairfax, and the Washington Post went right along with it and put that story out there like it actually had any merit. People saw through it immediately, knew exactly what it was. But and I'll bring up like the USDA. On my whistleblower show, we had so many people coming on from the USDA about what was going on in the Forestry Service, the molestation and rapes of women, about the continued discrimination against black farmers and other minority farmers, and how they were still running by the Dred Scott ruling that these people were things and not human beings, so they didn't have to mess with their complaints. And we hammered them so hard that December 1st of 2016, they held a House committee hearing, had the Joe Leonard in there and this Lagos woman from USDA, and then they had these women of forestry in there telling how they'd been treated, what had been done to them, and how, you know, blah, blah, blah. It ended up 2 weeks later, Joe Leonard resigned his position. But under Perdue, the new USDA secretary, this Lagos woman who was blatantly called a liar by the committee, got a promotion. Chavetz, who headed that committee and just hammered these people, suddenly quit and went to Fox News as a commentator. So I wrote him and I said, Mr. Chavetz, you know, after all of the hearings and everything else you did on the USDA, are you going to do any of expose on the USDA and forestry and what's been going on there? They won't even respond. This is how much control these people have. They just came out with, they found 35 cases of assault and everything else that they're investigating. Yeah, right. But this is, you're absolutely right, Robin. This is, they control what the public sees and hear. If you are listening to cable news, you're listening to your bullshit meter should be going over in the red zone, because that's basically what you're hearing. And anything of any importance, like what we're talking about here tonight, will never see the light of day on national news. It will never be in a national newspaper. It will never be on cable news or your local news network. You will never hear a peep about it. People will get fired. They will suddenly retire. They will get squashed, smashed, thrown off the top of a building, but they won't say a word. So the only voice any of these people have subject to that is people like us here on this program and other radio show hosts out there who are addressing these issues and these problems. Now, if the FFAA changes the net neutrality rules, and I guess they're getting hammered to death by the public not to do it. People like Luann and Robin, me, our websites, our radio shows, unless you pay an expensive fee, you won't be able to access them. You see how that works? We will be shut out totally.
Which is very sad. It's very sad. And that's why, you know, we're voices for the people that are voiceless, because they don't have the chance anymore to speak for themselves. They were murdered. And, you know, that's the way that I see this entire movement, is trying to be a voice for those that can't speak for themselves anymore. Another thing, too, is prosecutors, they refuse to act. In these medical killings, which you guys are, I know that you're very aware with that, of that. But for another reason, prosecutors know that the federal and state governments save many millions of dollars when people die sooner rather than later. You know, and they know that hospice is being promoted by the federal and the state governments. they also know that their political future would be damaged, of course, if they, you know, went after the local respected physician or a hospice and brought negative tension to the protected industry. That's another thing. They are so protected.
Yes.
Marty, it's almost impossible, like you're saying, to get them criminally, a healthcare worker criminally prosecuted for murder. And
right.
They have a loaded gun. The morphine is a loaded gun.
Yes.
In their hands.
Yep.
Wow.
Exactly.
I mean,
that's very powerful. It's very powerful.
And it is. And you can't get it out there. I don't know how many times, you know, we have tried to get stories out. We were told, you know, oh, yeah, we're going to cover this. And are you sure? And, yeah, here's the documentation. And then suddenly everything goes silent. And when you question them, and basically what it gets down to is somebody higher up squashed them and said, no, you're not reporting this. And one of the first instances I saw of this that was outright was when two Fox reporters, I despise Fox News anyway, but two Fox reporters, this was probably at least 10 years ago, reported on the recombinant growth hormone that they were using on cows to increase milk production by 20%.
Right.
Well, what they found out was that 20% increase in milk production was actually caused by mastitis, and it was blood and pus in the milk. And they reported it, and how this hormone carried over into the milk that came out in the market, and it caused early onset puberty in children. We saw this happen with some of our grandchildren. I at the time had a 9-year-old granddaughter that looked like she was a 21-year-old Victoria's Secret model, and they traced it right back to the growth hormone in the milk, the early onset of puberty in boys, they're scary enough when they get about 14, 15. You don't need to start this any sooner. And I raised two of them, so we don't need to see this happening, but they reported honestly, they got fired. They've never been able to get work again.
Mm-hmm.
And this is
what
we're talking about.
Terrible.
Yes.
Terrible.
Yes.
We should be able to tell the truth. The public needs to know the truth of what's going on. And it is so aggravating. And it, like I would say, it pisses me off too, Luann. I'm mad. Because we can't, it's not on the news. It should be on every news channel, in my opinion, and in all the papers, what's going on.
We should, I think, organize like our own town hall meetings, this thing of relying on legislators to do it. And it just, you know, I think we need to work in our communities. We've talked about this, you know, the only way we're going to change any of this, other than like they say, all politics is local, is to start at the bottom, start in our own communities and spread out across the state and do an awareness campaign that this is what's happening.
In Colorado, Marty. We're actually doing that in Colorado here. I'm actually in touch with some senators here, and actually we're going to be talking about the public administrator abuse audit. So I will be mentioning this to all the senators that I know, a lot of them.
Okay.
What is
good.
Done. And a lot of them come up to me. You know, I talked to the city of Aurora, and they actually fleeced his bank account too, the city of Aurora. He's the city attorney. Okay, so when you listen to that a city attorney, their family was fleeced in probate court. What does that mean for us? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Attorney, why didn't you speak up? Why didn't you do anything about it? And he's like, well, what can you do about it? And I was just totally shocked when I heard that.
You could strike
down
those statutes. That's the first thing that needs to happen, is to strike down those statutes. They are unconstitutional. And they were set up. This is an organized criminal ring operating, set up by your local bar association. And this is exactly why these statutes exist. No one should lose their rights, their identity, and their right to be heard. because they got put over into one of these kangaroo courts. They should be brought in, into a state court where the law supposedly is in effect, and there should be no court action ever taken that is not totally videotaped for record. There is no excuse that every court action, if you're going to steal someone's identity and declare them dead in the law, you make a video record of it so we can see exactly what the reasons were why you did that. And but I wanted, my question is, why would you do it to begin with? And the only reason you do this to someone is so that you can steal their assets. And in the case of, like, hospice, the only reason you do this to someone is because you're making money to do it.
That's right.
So you are no different than a paid hitman from what we like to call the Cosa Nostra, the mafia. You're just a different kind of mafia.
Yep,
and that person, that closer you talk about that comes in is no different than a mafia hitman who, you know, shoots you sitting in your car. No different.
That's right. You're
a paid killer.
It's white collared mafia is what it is.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask too, Marty, you know, because you are focused on as well the probate courts and abolishing them. But let me ask you this. If a probate judge gets in front of them, a family, let's say perhaps that are arguing, that, you know, this one is arguing over, you know, what they want and that, you know, in the estate or whatever the case may be, I have heard that the probate judge immediately just slaps on a guardian. They
yes.
won't listen to any of that in the courtroom. And so
this,
I think people also, you know.
This is the ideal situation, Carly, is if they can cause an adversarial situation in the family. The worst thing that can happen to your loved one is that siblings start fighting and arguing with each other over who's going to get what and who's going to control what. And the minute they detect this, boom, you got a guardian. You can't be in this. And people
That's
do themselves such a disservice by by squabbling and fighting instead of trying to maintain control over mom or dad or whoever it is. Now, like I say, this estate planning, this is fraud from start to end because there isn't an estate lawyer out there, an elderly lawyer out there, an elderly law expert who doesn't know that that plan they wrote up for you ain't worth the paper it's written on. Because a judge in these probate courts, these administrators, can discard them at will, and they do on a daily basis. So you're being defrauded by these attorneys. Now, when I think when a probate administrator discards freestanding legal agreements, the family has the right to go back and sue the attorney who put these instruments in place for fraud.
Amen.
And you know, they should be able to go back and sue them for fraud.
Yes.
Because either they sold them a fraudulent plan knowingly, or they were not the expert they claimed they were. And
that's
either way, it's fraud.
Marty, that's exactly what happened in our case, is that the attorneys that drew up our trust and will knew exactly that my family was arguing, and they actually ended up putting a big, huge $60,000 lien on our property.
Yeah.
And they took it away. So they knew, and they even said to me, well, I sure hope your mom has something left, you know.
That's
so I always
ruthless.
I ask everybody that comes on our radio channel, does your attorney have your back or do they have your back pocket? You need to ask that question every time, and every time you think, is this attorney really going to help me out, or is he just stalling? Then you know the answer already. Get rid of that attorney. Get that's going to work for you. You know.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, and seeing they're so dead set against pro se litigants now, and it's up to 78% of all cases filed across the country now are filed by pro se litigants, and we have judges openly showing their disgust for them. One of the first things you're asked in a court of any kind is, has your attorney been paid? What business is it that of the judge?
That's right.
Whether your attorney's been paid. And then ordering you to hire a member of the same bar they belong to, if you come back into court, there's nothing in the Constitution that says you have to belong to some fictitious association and carry one of their union cards and pay them dues in order to access that court. But the Bar Association, mm-hmm. I guarantee you, no matter which what courtroom you stand into, either owns it or leases it. And that is mm-hmm. their court. That is not a mm-hmm. court that belongs to the state. So they are operating mm-hmm. under fraud there. But we've got about 15 minutes left here. Carly?
Yes.
What do you advise people that find their family is sucked into this hospice thing? What would be the first thing you would tell them to do?
The first thing that I would tell them to do is revoke the hospice. Look, there is home health care that does a lot of times these hospices will say, we can provide, you know, giving them a bath. We can provide supplies such as diapers. We can supply, you know, insure, things like that. And I would immediately advise them, if they are not too deep in it, to get their loved one out as soon as they can. And then get home health, because they obviously, you know, home health does a myriad of things. They have nurses, physical therapy, speech therapy. Someone will come and help give a bath. And
yes.
they come every week. And so it's and you're in your home, and it's safe. They're not going to kill. They don't have the same drugs as hospice, and they're
right.
not going to kill your loved one. So
exactly.
That's it. That I would highly recommend that. Highly.
How do you go about revoking? How do you go about revoking?
Well, you have to speak to the hospital administrator. You have to speak to, or you can even speak to a nurse, like the charge nurse, and say, I want to revoke hospice. I want to revoke it. They have revocation papers, and you can get them out of there. If you're the power of attorney, the medical durable power of attorney, you can get them out of there.
Okay.
You know, even with, I'm trying to think what I've done. I've even called before on behalf of another individual. You know, other people, you know, I don't know if they would want to do this, but I called 911 to go have an individual checked out. So you can, okay, get them to a hospital. And, if they need to have rehabilitation done, a doctor will write a prescription, and they can have rehabilitation done if that's needed.
Okay.
So you can do revocation if you're the medical power of attorney.
Okay.
You
are those documents
it.
Available online on your site? Maybe are those available on your site?
Oh, yeah, you can get I know that we talk about them a lot on our site. I'd have to double check up with and check and see if we have that, but you can get look anywhere for free. Google it.
Okay.
You can get it.
Okay.
All you have to do is have a notary, and you can get it at Office Depot. You can get it at many places. It's very easy to get.
Okay, and let me say something about notary. You know, that seal with somebody's name on it is worthless as hell. Your notary is your thumbprint. Your notary is your thumbprint. It is indisputable. It is inviolable. They cannot dispute your thumbprint, but they can discard that notarized statement that has that seal on it that somebody paid to, you know, so they can charge you. Say, yeah, I witnessed and saw their ID. You don't need that.
Yeah.
All you need on there is your thumbprint. Use a magic marker. Put your thumbprint right on there. That's your notary. And that is the actual legal, lawful notary. That or your index finger, but the thumb is easier. And you put that
wonderful.
Next to your signature. And that is your notary. That is you.
That's even better.
And it's
better.
Indisputable. It cannot be challenged. And
that's great.
Yeah, so... but see, people are so brainwashed, Carly, They are so, well, yeah. An attorney told me this, and a lawyer told me that, and I paid them $20,000, and yeah, and what'd they do for you? What'd they do
mm-hmm.
for you? They breached
right.
the contract with you. Yeah. They
don't
breached their contract with you.
People, this is the main thing. You talk about we've all been taught to do this, and it's true. We're just indoctrinated with it. Don't
yeah.
be afraid to question people that are in authority in the right way, in a civil
yeah.
way, and
yes.
challenge what they're saying, and don't be afraid to do that, people, because it can save your loved one's life.
And you go into one of these administrative courts; they too are required to swear an oath and have it on file. The first thing you do is ask that administrator sitting up there to produce a copy
mm-hmm.
of the oath that they signed. Now,
mm-hmm.
it will be different than one in the court of law. The one in the court of law says they will uphold and defend the Constitution. And there it just it'll say all kinds of things, but the Constitution will be mentioned. So
mm-hmm.
unless they can produce that, they have no jurisdiction. And
mm-hmm. okay.
many times they can't produce it. I think here last year they found in California more than half the judges sitting on benches making decisions had no oath on file. And then the
mm-hmm.
ones that did, they had removed whole sections of the oath that talked about the Constitution and your rights and protecting and defending it, which made their oath worthless. But every one of them has got to have this oath on file. But I think the other answer lies possibly. I know this gets into this sovereignty and all this other stuff. I'm not in that. But this grand jury thing, our right to a grand jury, our right to a trial by jury, and that doesn't mean a judge sitting making a unilateral decision. It means if you're going to steal someone's identity and declare them dead in the law, there better be 12 people or 9 people from your community sitting there hearing the reasons why, viewing the evidence, and making a determination whether this needs to happen or not. And under no
mm-hmm.
circumstances should anyone be stripped of their constitutional rights and protections, even if they are incapacitated. If they are, they need more protection than ever. They don't need to be
mm-hmm.
reduced to that of an animal and treated like they are a piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
This is just, I get
so
angry.
Another thing
yeah.
I wanted to add, which is important, is that people do not realize that they are not getting informed consent from these hospices. They will not tell you, okay, Marty, that they're going to give 20 milligrams of Roxanol morphine or 40
mm-hmm.
Or how, you know, however much of Ativan
yeah.
or Seroquel or Haldol. What happens, and people don't know this, they have no
mm-hmm.
idea how this happens. You
right.
talk about the nurse, can that do as much as she wants? Once
yep.
a physician order form is signed, and they
mm-hmm.
there's only 4 things on that. That's
yeah.
morphine, Ativan, Haldol, Seroquel. Once he
yep.
checks it off, then that's given.
That's
and
a
that
standing
person
order.
Didn't even give. Yep, didn't
yep.
even give informed consent.
We have
yeah.
a caller here, real quickly. Area code 831. Did you have a question or comment?
Oh, hi, Marty. It's Marissa. I just had a quick comment, and Carly has given your listeners so much valuable information. But, you know, it's so true, the power these hospice nurses have and the sociopathic, psychopathic behavior. I know a victim whose father was drugged in a hospice program. He was in a coma for 2 weeks. He barely survived. And then the family was, their eyes, like Carly's, were opened wide. They were a lot
mm-hmm.
more careful because we had to have rehab to recover from the OD from the hospice abuse.
Yeah.
And so okay. they knew to tell the staff under no circumstances is our loved one to have any antipsychotic or psychotropic drugs. And they stayed with their loved one. The nurse came in, pulled the pajamas down. The family said, "What are you doing?" The nurse said, "Oh, I'm just giving the patient some a suppository for constipation." Their loved one died. When they got the medical records, that evil nurse lied to the family's face and in front of them covertly gave the patient a suppository, an anal suppository of phenobarbital.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. That's how sneaky they are. They.
Yeah.
That's how disgusting.
And I want to know where these people come from. How come there cannot be that many sociopaths and psychopaths, you wouldn't think, walking among us, but apparently there is.
Well, a lot of these medical miscreants, they fancy themselves, they take pride in the facade that they project publicly. They're usually in positions of power publicly. They tend to hide behind their religion, whether they're a business person of the year award or they fancy themselves a philanthropist. They hide behind the cloak.
Yeah,
philanthropy and religion.
And and this religion thing too is starting to irk me really bad. I've heard, and I'm gonna keep hammering the heck out of these people. I keep seeing these people, and they're talking about what good Christians they are, and they're pro-life, and this and that, and something else. They will not open up and say a damn word about these terrible guardianships, about what goes on in these nursing homes, what goes on in hospice. They will not say a word because they might lose their tax-exempt status. So, like I told people, if you're looking for God, the last place you want to go is to a church because he ain't there. That's all about the bank. But I have just hammered these churches. I don't want to hear any more pro-life stuff from out of you. Everybody has a right to life. The case of Anastasia Adams, that girl fought so hard to survive, to live far longer than they ever anticipated. Her will to live was so strong, and yet they
It was a terrible case.
Yes.
Oh, man, that broke my heart.
That one tore me to pieces, Marty. That one, Anastasia Adams, just tore me up for days. It really has.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to add another thing that Carly encouraged listeners to do is to not be afraid to question authority if they have concerns about the quality of care their loved one is getting. One thing people need to do is empower themselves. They have the power. The authority, the true authority, lies with the patient. And if the patient is unable for whatever reason to make their own medical decision, it is the medical durable power of attorney who is the decision maker over all other decision makers, over doctors, nurses, hospital admin. The patient and the MDPOA are the ones with the true power. They are the ones in authority, not the health care workers.
And that's true.
But
and
that's the first thing that they is cast aside, see? That's the first thing that is
taken
away.
Oh, and a guardianship. Yeah, and the guardianship it is. It's removed. But also when the victim is not in a guardianship, it's violated and ignored.
Okay.
Right. It's the guardianships that have the control over the families and loved ones. And that's where so many families come in, and they want to take care of their loved ones. I hear it all day long. But the guardians, the husband and wife separated. They keep them separated from your mother. It's one of the most barbaric things I've ever heard in my life happening to our nation.
I
heard a horrific case of a Canadian couple where the husband was medically kidnapped. And this was a couple that was married 52 years, and the guardian divorced them against their will.
Yes, they tried to do that to Sarah. And Gary Harvey tried to divorce them. Well, we've only got about a minute and a half left here. I want to echo something Luann said on the last show. There's a lot of hosts that want to join the show, and we want you to come on and join the show with us and work together as a team. But if I'm not looking to form an organization or a club or anything else. This is a working together as a team thing. Nobody is the queen. Nobody's the king. I don't want to hear who's a star. I don't want to hear any of this stuff. It's me. It's me. I did it. And you took credit for it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. We are looking for dedicated advocates that are devoted to working together. We'll pull this together. We can do it. But if you're going to start this stuff of my organization against your organization, and I did it first, and it was me, and you said it was you, you can kiss my fluffy old ass. Stay away from me. That is just exactly how I feel about it.
I love it.
Well, but anyway, we've got 30 seconds here, Carly. Thank you so much. We're going to have you back on. We're going to have Ron on when he's available. Got a message from him. But we are going to expand on this hospice thing. And you're going to be on Luann's show, correct?
Yeah.
Ron's going to be on. Yeah. And so we'll be watching for the promo for that. We need as many of you show hosts as we can get to get these people out there, get them speaking, get them all the exposure we can get them. I'm not here to compete. Let's move this forward. We can do it. And with that, I have to say goodnight. We're out of time. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.